Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's our Tech Radio Hour and our final Tech Radio before the November 3rd election. Today we're going to talk election security, social media, the fight against disinformation, and more. Plus, did the delayed Prime Day kick off the holiday shopping season already? You can be part of our conversation by emailing your questions and comments to inthemoment@sdpb.org, or you can text us 605-956-7372. That's 956-SDPB. Let's introduce today's panelists. We have with us Jeff Litterick. He's a network engineer with the Bureau of Information and Technology in Pierre. Hey, Jeff, welcome back.
Hello, all. Glad to be back.
And Kent Osborne is Director of Digital Content at South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Kent, welcome.
Hello, good to be here.
We're going to get things started here with a little bit of the top news, because Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey has now apologized for blocking the sharing of a New York Post article that accuses Hunter Biden of inappropriate conduct. And we're going to dig into what that means and the sort of political fallout of that a little bit. Kent, let's start with you. This is not new. This concept of, you know, Facebook sort of minimized the sharing, the shareability of this article from the New York Post. Twitter out and right said we're not going to share it because it violates our hacking policy, because the article references emails that were found in a laptop that was dropped off at a repair shop in Delaware and never picked up, and then somehow ended up in the hands of Rudy Giuliani's lawyer, which ended up in the hands of the New York Post. And so Twitter said this violates our, you know, the way this information was achieved or received violates our policy. Now they've changed that policy, all kinds of back and forth going on here. And really we're getting at this big question of how much political power do tech giants have during an election season? Where do you want to kick this off? How should we think about these stories as they come out this close to election day?
Well, one thing I'd like to add to that that's been happening this week too is the FCC is now getting involved and saying they are going to use Trump's executive order to start regulating social media because of these blocks of this information by Twitter. So, or at least regulate Twitter. I don't know if they can or how that's all going to fall in the courts, but it is interesting the FCC is now stepping in saying, you know what, because of this and because of Block, we are now going to start regulating social media and what you can and cannot do.
Yeah.
We'll see how far it goes, but it's getting, and there's been, and they're already subpoenaed to Congress, the Twitter CEO is too, to answer for this, at least in the Senate. I know there's been bills in the House before. Every politician seems to be upset at social media this election cycle for one reason or another. So,
yeah. Well, let's. We're going to hear a little bit from Senator Thune. So we're going to unpack this for listeners who haven't been following it, that the FCC is moving forward, as Jeff said, with some rulemaking to clarify interpretation of kind of immunity for social media platforms regarding the Communications and Decency Act and Section 230, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. Senator John Thune on the Commerce Committee was on Fox News, and he talked about the need for reform of Section 230 of the 1996 Communications Decency Act. And here's a little bit of what he had to say about that.
You now have essentially three companies that have virtually monopoly power in their particular space of the market. And I think there has to be some accountability. Now, the Democrats up until now, as you pointed out, have been interested in that as well. Currently, it's Republicans who seem in conservative content that seems to be getting censured. But I would hope that there would be bipartisan interest in bringing these big companies to account, not only because of their monopoly power, but also because of the shield against liability that they have with respect to the way that they moderate content. And those issues need to be looked at again.
But what if they
argue,
Senator,
that
they're not?
A little bit there from Senator John Thune on Fox News talking about, you know, he said that, you know, the monopoly issue might have to be decided by the Judiciary Committee, but this whole idea of immunity from blocking content or allowing content might have to be reviewed. Kent Osborne, did you want to weigh in on this as we get started here?
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely this thing's going to go to court. The whole thing with antitrust allegations and the whole legal defense of Section 230, is it unlawful behavior or is it what is it? Is it a mistake? Are they lying? It's going to end up in court. Absolutely, and that's how it's going to have to shake out. Unfortunately, things see a few seats have changed on the FCC. There was a Republican appointee that did not get reappointed after he came out in support of Section 230. So he happens to be replaced by the person in the White House that wrote the the opposition to it. So I don't think it's going to take long for the FCC to put the kibosh on it, but it's going to end up in court. Absolutely.
And we have this week Judge Clarence Thomas from Justice Clarence Thomas from the U.S. Supreme Court releasing this sort of 10-page comment attached to a case that it doesn't really pertain to, signaling that it is ripe for review, and he thinks that the Section 230 has been misinterpreted or too broadly interpreted. And if I think his words are, "We need not decide today the correct interpretation of 230, but in an appropriate case, it behooves us to do so," which is a signal to others that it's time to bring a case up to that level. Let's talk about Section 230 a little bit, because Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, these are not publishing companies. That the definition of what exactly they are has been under scrutiny for quite some time. Jeff, are they? Do they have they ha they want the power to limit the spread of toxic information, of hate speech, of information that incites violence, of disinformation, especially during the election? They're looking back to what happened in 2016, and basically they're saying this article, they know it's all coming, in the final days, there's going to be a glut of disinformation out there. And they say this New York Post article was of dubious quality and not necessarily worth letting go untagged as such. Do they have the right to limit the kind of toxic or dangerous or misinformed or disinformation that they want to? Let's talk about that, Jeff.
They have the right to block anything they don't like, and they regularly do. And every platform is a little bit different. A good example is nudity. Facebook, Instagram block all nudity. Twitter does not block any nudity. So in their terms of service that they pay, because they're private corporations under these exemptions, they have the right, and they feel they have the right, that can be challenged in court, that they whatever they decide, and they can change their terms at any time. So technically, yes, they decide if they don't want like the name Jeff, they can block every post with the name Jeff in it. And legally, they are in their right at this point in time. And they don't have to give a reason why. That because of the nature of this, they can do that. Now, of course, if they want people on their platform to use it, they tend to have sensible terms of service and try to follow them. And that's what's really getting the problem is because they've been changing a lot of stuff for the election and try to stop this. And they're under pressure to make more changes. So, some of the changes may be not fully thought out when they're making them. And different platforms are having different terms of service. So they're not, you what you can do on Facebook doesn't mean you can do on Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat or TikTok. They're all different. So, a base question, yeah, they have the right to block anything. They don't have to let you post or share anything on their platform. They don't want you to. And they can change that at any time. They might
And
drive all
Jeff,
the
does
users
that,
off of it, but that's
yeah.
their right.
And that gets back to, Twitter CEO apology and changing their policy so quickly after so much backlash as well. But let's talk about, we talk about rights, let's talk about responsibilities, because that has been some of the accusation, is that in the days up to an election, there is going to be a lot of misinformation, which is not necessarily of bad intent. It's inaccuracies and mistakes, but there's also going to be plenty of disinformation, which is deliberate attempts to mislead people. That's what this article has been accused of being. So do they have, that goes back, Jeff Litterick, to this idea of, do they have to moderate disinformation? Do they have a responsibility to tell you this is a fake post? This is a manufactured post. This is something that has ill intent.
I think that's what we're going to find out. They don't have to moderate anything. But once again, they're under enormous pressure to be responsible, right? And some of the CEOs probably have more, a feel that we need to be responsible to implement. The problem is everybody's limit on that, and their definition is different. And what they're afraid of, and why Twitter was apologizing, is right now they pretty much free to do anything. Congress can pass a law that says, no, you're not free to do this, and you can't moderate anything, or you must moderate this, or you must block hate speech, and here's the definition of hate speech. This could be enforced by law, their terms of service, and they may not like what they're going to have to do, right? So they're trying to avoid any law basically defining this stuff, because it kind of hedges the companies in, and they don't have a choice anymore. I think most of the companies feel their employees, their executive officers feel responsibility to do this, but it's a slippery slope, and everyone has the edge, the boundaries are kind of wavy, and exactly like this article from a press. I mean, this was a journalistic article that Twitter decided to block. Where do you draw the line and stuff? And I think it may come down to Congress defining the lines for them, and then they don't get the choice in the matter anymore. But this will play out over time. There's a lot of pressure, and they're trying to avoid any legal and laws being passed. And I think Congress on both sides has gained to the point where they've had enough and are going to start defining some stuff and enforcing some stuff.
Right. And Kent, that takes us back, to Jeff's point, about the First Amendment, and, the New York Post is responsible for their content, and they can be sued. The Biden administration, it should be noted, has disavowed this article and said there is nothing in it that's true, but the Post has to stand by their reporting and will be held accountable accordingly. Should Facebook be able to do that holding of the accountability? Because then you get into this issue of what newspaper articles can they, this is a country that stands on the First Amendment. There's something distasteful. Yeah, yeah. If it's not outright illegal, it leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths when a social media giant says, we don't want to share this newspaper account, especially.
Yeah. And to underscore what Jeff said is, I mean, Twitter and Facebook absolutely have the First Amendment on their side. Now, does that mean that as a consumer, I want them just, floodgates are open? No, because there are websites like that, and I don't like them. I don't like those sites. They're the crudest, meanest, nastiest places to hang out on the internet, and I don't like them. But that's where a lot of folks went. And I've really, this is going to sound weird, I really feel for the people at Facebook and Twitter, when all this started bubbling up, and they didn't have a policy about it. We were in, and still are in a large degree, in very uncharted territory when it comes to rights and information and other things. And I just can't imagine. I mean, Facebook was built to connect human beings together and be this great place. And look what it's turned into. Look at the campaigns that are out there right now. I just this morning saw a Facebook friend of mine post a tweet from a Russian about an American election. It had to do with the Biden thing. And it's like, holy mackerel. It started out so innocent, and it's become such a toxic waste dump.
Do I get to say at this point here that the innocent beginning of Facebook includes, rating women on how they look?
Well, it's okay. They were college boys too. Okay, you know, I'm not gonna defend everything.
And college
but,
women.
But their stated purpose when they went public and everything, you know, they opened it up to just beyond college students was, yeah, this is for families. This is to make connections with other, you know, young people as well. And it's just, yeah. I mean, yes. I just can't imagine being on the board or being a policymaker in either one of these two companies. It's just had to be grueling and maddening for the last, you know, 6-7 years.
Yeah. I'm not sure I feel sorry for them, Kent, because of what they, you know, if you're going to open this platform, you have to deal with the nuances of it. And
well, I can say I empathize. Is that better?
Yes, I empathize with them. It's just got to be a really tough time to cash that check and have to deal with these complicated issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And Jeff Litterick, to Kent's point about, you know, the last 7 years or whatever if we want to put a time frame on this, this is really important, not just for the 2016 election, not just for the 2020 election. Long after President Donald Trump and Vice President Joe Biden have faded from the political scene, these questions will remain because there are vulnerabilities in this system that people are intent on exploiting.
And it's, you know, and more than just the elections, and yeah, other governments, you know, are dealing with this in different ways. Because if you remember the Arab Spring, most right. of that was organized over Facebook. That's why those countries, I know Egypt immediately shuts down all Facebook and social media access if there's any protests going on, as does Iran and many other kind of countries, because it can be used and was used for that and setting that kind of stuff up. So there's quite a few governments around the world that would like to see a very strict noose put around any and all social media, and for many reasons, not just our election, right, and going forward. So this is going to be kind of one of those issues we'll be dealing with forever. And even once you define it, you know, as times change, what was valid one day may not be valid the next. So that's why it kind of is dangerous to start putting this stuff in laws, because culture changes. Stuff yeah. changes over time. And what was maybe frowned upon on one day is not another, and vice versa, right? So, and to be honest, laws don't tend to keep up with that. Those kind of changes. And social media is probably the most fluid culture there is in many ways. It's what's acceptable and not acceptable to the majority of users at any given instant, it seems like. It seems like one day that's okay, next day it's not, and then third day, oh, it's back okay again sometimes. So, and the companies think up to this point have been trying to be very hands-off so they yeah. don't get in the middle of this, but I think everyone's going to force everybody into the middle of this.
Right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about election security and just how to, as you know, consumers of news and users of social media, how to sort of vet some of these things. And some of that process and thought process is tricky even for the president. So stay with us on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's our Tech Radio Hour, and Jeff Litterick, a network engineer with the Bureau of Information and Technology and Peer, is with us. Ken Osborne, Director of Digital Content at SDPB, is also on the line with us. And we're talking about some of the top news in tech and social media, new releases. And let's talk a little bit about election security. And you know, as these tech giants, as Congress, as the FCC, as the U.S. Supreme Court try to sort out the policies and what's legal and not, meanwhile, you know, we're pretty close to a presidential election and a lot of things are going to be popping up on our feeds. And Kent, you pointed out that the president of the United States maybe took something seriously that wasn't intended to be serious and retweeted it. Tell us a little bit about that, and then let's talk about kind of digging into what you're sharing and understanding what it is you're sharing.
Yeah, well, this morning the president retweeted a Babylon Bee article about the whole, you know, Hunter Biden thing, and you know, addressed it as being truthful. And it's been pointed out that the Babylon Bee is very much, it's like a what are some of the websites that are satirical, like The Onion or other websites like that. It's a satirical website being taken in factual context and then sent out as information to followers of the president. And it's striking to say, I can't probably use the words I'd like to use on the radio about how concerned I am about this, but it's hard to believe it was done in jest or or in innocence, but it's really amazing. Let's just put it that way. It's I'm going to use the word amazing. Yeah. But we.
I'm just going to jump in with just a note to listeners, you know, so for clarity, the allegations against Hunter Biden aren't really what we're talking about with our tech radio panelists. That's a conversation for our Dakota political junkies. You know, no one in this conversation is a political science professor. So we're really talking about this whole idea of sharing and how information gets spread and the controversy and the policies behind it. So did the president take a big backlash for that? Was it continued to be shared? It's sort of this mistaking of a satirical post for something serious and literal.
Well, you know, yeah, of course he's taking some hits. I haven't been following it too closely this morning. Honestly, I saw that it happened and read a few reactions and set it aside, get more work done, I guess. I haven't been following that, but the whole, issue of information, as you're talking about, shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Our government warned us days ago, weeks ago, that this final push was going to happen. You know, they basically said to buckle up, Buttercup. These last 30 days of this election are going to be. And from all sort of different sources and malinformation and misinformation and disinformation, those are three different things, by the way, and they're all in play right now. I do have to feel sorry for the sysadmins that are out there right now today, this very day. I'm seeing lots of reports of very increased malware and phishing attempts and spear phishing on systems in the U.S. And I know that goes on every day, but it doesn't normally go on to the degree that it is right now. And so you know, I really have to put it out there to the sysadmins that are going through the trenches right now, because it's horrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for consumers, you know, again, for listeners, misinformation, those are mistakes. Think of it misinformation. That's information that you got that turned out not to be accurate. That can happen from a news source. That can happen from a friend. Disinformation is deliberate. And somebody is intentionally trying to spread lies and rumors and, you know, to obfuscate truth. Malware conversation as well. Jeff, let's talk a little bit about election security in South Dakota, because South Dakota Public Broadcasting and the Bureau of Information and we're going to put a link up to a video Secretary Steve Barnett talks about our election process here in the state. Some of this disinformation is going to be about the security of our elections. And Jeff, what does that look like in South Dakota? What do people need to know about election security in the state? Jeff Litterick? We might have lost him. We're going to put that video up for you on our website after the program at listen.sdpb.org. Let's talk a little bit about another online social media giant, YouTube, and the president talking about QAnon last night during a town hall. And what you're going to hear here is a clip of the host, Savannah Guthrie, asking the president about QAnon And then when we come back from this clip, we'll talk a little bit about YouTube's efforts to deal with conspiracy theories that lead to, that encourage, I should say, violent action. Here is a little bit of President Trump talking with Savannah Guthrie.
Let me ask you about QAnon. It is this theory that Democrats are a satanic pedophile ring and that you are the savior of that. Now, can you just once and for all state that that is completely not true,
so,
and disavow QAnon in its entirety?
I know nothing about QAnon.
I just told you.
I know very little. You told me, but what you tell me doesn't necessarily make it fact. I hate to say that. I know nothing about it. I do know they are very much against pedophilia. They fight it very hard, but I know nothing about
it. They believe it is
if
a satanic
like
cult run by the deep
study
state.
The subject, I'll tell you what I do know about. I know about Antifa, and I know about the radical left, and I know how violent they are and how vicious they are, and I know how they're burning down cities run by Democrats, not run
Republican
by Republicans.
Republican Senator Ben Sasse said, quote, QAnon is nuts, and real leaders call conspiracy theories conspiracy theories.
He may be
Why
right.
not just say it's
Can
crazy and not true?
He may be right. I just don't know about QAnon.
You do know.
I don't know. No, I don't know. I don't know.
Heated exchange in a town hall with Savannah Guthrie of NBC and President Donald Trump talking about QAnon. And Jeff Litterick or Kent, this is another situation where YouTube is trying to crack down on content that is conspiracy theory related, that is tied with real life violence. Let's keep talking about the things that we are paying attention to and how we're paying attention to them in the days running up to the election. Jeff, any thoughts on this one?
On this particular clip, I'm not quite sure what YouTube is doing with it. It's kind of back to the way it was before the responsibility versus a slippery slope, and you're never going to make everybody happy no matter what you do. So, you know, at a certain point, it may be disinformation, maybe misinformation, but if it's coming from the highest levels of the government, should you ever censor that kind of stuff? Where do you draw that line of stuff? No matter what, no what they say at that level. And Trump has tweeted out more than once weird stuff like that from that satirical websites and information. But he still is the president. Do you censor the president ever? Should you ever? Congress, leaders of Congress, the Senate, the House. Senior leadership, cabinet members. I mean, where do you draw the line? Even if it is misinformation, maybe you just label it if you think it's misinformation. But how do you censor that kind of stuff without causing a lot of other issues potentially?
Yeah. No. Kent, any thoughts that you want to add here? We're still talking about just, you know, if nothing is if nothing is reviewed, you get to a very nasty internet place.
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts about QAnon. And again, some of the language I'd like to use is not appropriate
to be clear,
at this time.
Yeah.
But you know, it sprung out of the whole Pizzagate. You know, Hillary Clinton was running a sex ring out of the basement of a pizza parlor and, you know, in the D.C. area. And I guess if you believe that, you can believe everything else that they say. And it's and being a little bit in the stream of things for, again, I catch this from people that I'm friends with that are very intelligent people saying really incredulous things. And I think why the fervor is so, you know, they say the research is very solid, and I have yet to see that, but they are truly very, they believe the convictions of the, you know, people have used the word cult or faith of QAnon, and they're very, very passionate about that, that these are the facts. And they are, as was described in the video a little bit, they're a little bit out there. They're a lot out there. And I think YouTube's doing the right thing, but it's a really crazy deal.
Yeah. Let's go back before we take another break to just some of the tips leading up to the election. You know, cybersecurity is really important right now. Good news hygiene is really important right now before you click on a link that somebody shared on Facebook. Remember the headline, back out of Facebook and then go Google it and find a reputable source to see, you know, just look up Hunter Biden and you're going to find a whole lot of articles that are going to give you an in-depth look at what this story is without clicking through on a link that somebody shared you from some unknown source. So be really careful before you click. Jeff Litterick, our ballots in South Dakota are all paper. Those counting machines are never connected to the internet. If you hear information about election fraud in South Dakota, none of it is connected to online sources in this state. Do I understand that correctly?
Outside displaying the results, no. So we have, we display right. the results through web and stuff, but that doesn't change the counts, right? And people are checking that. If someone would hack the website or change those numbers, it's easily verified and fixed. Because on the base level, we do everything and keep a physical copy of everything. Not every state does, but we do. So we can always go back if anyone has any suspicions and say, well, here's the actual paper ballots and stuff. Let's recount them. We have that physicality. It's kind of hard to hack a piece of paper unless you can physically get your hands on it. One thing I will kind of mention with the misinformation, clicking links is, I'm actually finding Google's being corrupted somewhat in that if you do Google searches on news items, you're getting both the bad and the good. And sometimes the bad is in your middle of your page. So do be really careful, especially now. I wouldn't click on anything unless you knew exactly the source and double click the URL and stuff. The attacks are climbing like crazy. And one thing to remember is, on the misinformation election, it's not just Russia. It's China. It's Russia. It's Iran. It's North Korea. Every single almost government in the world is spreading or trying to influence election in one way or another for either side, right? At least any of our enemies are. We're seeing reports from North Korea, from China, from Russia, from Eastern Europe, from Iran, different Middle East countries and stuff like that all the time trying to spread misinformation. So, and a lot of it just, you know, use common sense. Just think about it. That's probably not reality, like the pizzeria being that. If that was made national news, the police, I think, would have discovered it fairly quickly, and it would be running for months and months afterwards, right? So use a lot of common sense, a lot of stuff. The election is pretty secure in South Dakota, but there are attacks. Department of Homeland Security is constantly sending out alerts about ongoing attacks on election infrastructure. But in most cases, even if there is something that's suspicious, we always have the physical thing. And that's Mihan County even said yesterday, it may take 2 days, 2 to 3 days for them to count. Because they may need to recount the physical ballots, just double check everything, right?
Right.
So it delays election results, but it's a much safer election in South Dakota for everybody involved.
Yeah. And great tip about clicking on any links in a Google search, you know, go right to, you know, it's hard to hack into a newspaper that you pick up on your front doorstep. It's, you know, here we are having our conversation. And if you listen to this show, you hear my voice and Jeff's voice and Ken Osborne's voice, and we're your neighbors. So there's my plug for local radio, local journalism, local news, and making sure before you get spun up about an article and share things that maybe social media is not the best place to be looking right now for that kind of information. Maybe it's a great place to share pictures of your dog and
absolutely
and what you ate for dinner. All of a sudden those seem quaint. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back and talk about Prime Day and maybe some new gear and remote working, stuff like that when we come back on Tech Radio. You're on listener supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's our Tech Radio Hour, and Jeff Litterick is with us. He's an engineer with the Bureau of Information and Technology in Peer. We've also got Kent Osborne joining us today. He's Director of Digital Content and SDPB. And we're going to put up on our website, you can find it at sdpb.org or at listen.sdpb.org attached to this conversation. After the show, we'll post a link to the video from Bureau of Information and Technology and South Dakota Public Broadcasting talking about election security in the state. Kent Osborne, any final thoughts on election security and cybersecurity right now before we talk about some of these fun topics to close the show?
Well, if you want to, you know, the most accurate and reliable election information is going to come right from our very own Secretary of State. And you can skip all the links and all the things. And if you just put SD.gov in your browser and you get to the state's website, you'll be able to find the election information from November 3rd. And that's going to be the best authority on, or their social media, of course, but the best authority of what's actually going on. And, you know, the other, and I just can't stress this enough. Everyone can do their part to help stop the spread of disinformation. You have to rely on those trusted sources. And the Secretary of State is one of them. You have to be prepared as a voter. So go out and do your research, become knowledgeable about things and how the process works and how to cast your vote. Again, now that information is going to be out on the Secretary of State's website. You know, think twice before sharing stuff that you see online. And this stuff comes from a variety of places. It's mainstream media, it's social media, it's word of mouth, it's online forums, it's texts, even texts and emails. Be really careful about what's coming at you in the next 20 days. And, you know, be careful about posting that stuff. You know, and be on the lookout. I always, you know, the little hair on the back of my neck stands a little bit when I see people post things and they're using all caps and they're, I'm so outraged about this. And, you know, if, as we've learned over the last 4, 5, 6 years, it's easy to manipulate people that are by using overly emotional content. So yeah. Be careful of the content that tries to make you angry or to create division, because there's a reason they're doing that. And I'm going to leave it at that. I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm going to say, just help do your part in stopping the spread of this, because that'll help as well. It'll help everybody.
Yeah, well said.
One thing that there was just on Nova on PBS, a series, I think, of maybe 3 or 4 episodes of a program called Hacking Your Mind. And it kind of delved deep into how marketers and all these people are trying to influence you through social media and how they are finding ways to program human beings, so to speak. It's like Kent was saying, to trigger you and program you in certain ways. It's a fascinating series on PBS called Hacking Your Mind. And once you know what's going on, it's much easier to see when people are trying to manipulate you. So I do encourage people, if you're interested, to go through that series.
Yeah. And I would also encourage you to make a plan for voting. You know, one of the things is know where your polling place is. If you get a notification at the last minute that your polling place is closed, drive to your polling place. It might be open. And make sure that nobody gets interferes with your right to cast your vote. But make a plan for that and how long it might take on that day. And there might be lines. And with the coronavirus, you might have lines that are out the door. So just think about how you're going to cast your vote and be thoughtful about the information you share and how you make those decisions, but also how you're going to do that. So I think let's transition here in our remaining 10 minutes or so and talk about some of the other stories in tech right now. New iPhone coming out. Remote working is always in the headlines in some way and or the other. And of course, it was Prime Day. Like, Kent, can you explain that to me? That doesn't seem like now is the time for Prime Day.
Well, it wasn't originally.
Okay.
it's usually in the summer, and because COVID, it was pushed back, and for some reason it landed on the previous 2 days from today, and so it wasn't really odd time. I mean, I wasn't kind of prepared for it. People went out and got deals, not only on Amazon gear, which, you know, they were aplenty, but also diapers and other things, just things that you wouldn't normally associate with, you know, typical early Christmas shopping kind of things. And that's what does, that's what was planted in my mind going through all this is like, oh, this is, you know, what do I need to do next? Do I need to do Christmas shopping? And we're getting almost close enough to start seeing that, you know, that down. Yeah, I've already seen people posting, oh, it's, you know, 15 Fridays until Christmas or whatever. You know, I've seen those posts on the internet. And so that's what's put in my mind is, oh, this is really early Christmas shopping. And it really wasn't. It wasn't really supposed to be. But that's how it felt to me.
Yeah. But Jeff, everything, you know, we have maybe learned in the past 6 months that sometimes you click order and something does not arrive at your doorstep the next day. Are people planning ahead and realizing that it's time to think about how long things might take to get or what will run out between now and Christmas?
Yeah, and it's, Amazon kind of picked a weird time for Prime Day because all those packages will be trying to get out right around November, right before the election, all the mail balance too. So the post office says it's not going to be an issue though. So and things are taking longer. And I've noticed, especially on Amazon, sometimes you don't get different shipping options anymore. I got some daily bathroom cleaner because can't find in the stores right now, some refills, and they would it was free shipping only at 3 to 5 days, and they had no other shipping. And even stuff we've normally, you know, next date and stuff like that, emergency parts and pieces that are needed, nope, it's gonna be a week or so, because they just took the second day and next day shipping options entirely off that order for some reason. So running into that more and more. So if you're lucky to live in a hub city, Sioux Falls, I know, may be one here soon. But Amazon delivers locally. That's great. If you're more like most of South Dakota, rural, I've noticed stuff taking longer to get to us. I've heard horror stories in some states about how, you know, weeks to get a package. I have it through the mail system, but I haven't seen that here myself. But yeah, it's definitely slower, and you have to kind of be thinking ahead a little bit. You just can't order exactly when you want to use it that day or the next day anymore, which was Amazon's benefits. But
right. Well, how about some of the things for people who are still remote working? Are there gift ideas that it might be time to start looking into, some of the unexpected things, Jeff? Or do you want to begin with that?
Well, I'll throw something out, and you know, when we're at the office and stuff, we all have our office work furniture and chairs and stuff like that. But when you're at home, it's not like a lot of offices will let you take the furniture home with you, right? So there was an interesting article I ran into today about low-end office chairs, because most people may not realize this, but a high-end good office chair can run easily $1,000. Sure. The office chairs you buy at Walmart and stuff, which I've used in the past, I don't use anymore, that are $100, $120 are not nearly as comfortable, and they just don't last as long or are as reliable as your mainline steel case office chair. But they also don't cost, you know, $800 to $1,000. But there's another category of chairs that kind of grew up in the last couple of years called gaming chairs. If you do a lot of gaming, you know about these. They're called gaming chairs because some of them look like gaming that. Some of them look like normal chairs. They're all really good, but they meet a $300 to $500 price line in it. And they're almost as good as your very high-end office chair for comfort, reliability, be able to support weight, height adjustments, all that kind of stuff. And be much, much an order of magnitude better than your cheap office chair. And sure. Like I said, I used to be have to actually swap chairs if I was at home in front of the computer for very long times, just because of issues with the chairs. In 2019, I went to a Secret Labs, they're not sponsoring me in any way, a Secret Labs chair. And I found it interesting that the gaming chairs, you actually have to put in your weight and height. And each chair line has minimum, you have to be at this minimum height at that maximum height within this weight range, because the chairs are very tailored to be long-term comfortable chairs for the body types and depend on your height and weight. And I went to that, and it took a little while to get broken in, but I love my chair. It cost me about $500 for the version I got, but the gaming chairs can be very worth it. Read reviews and stuff, but it is a low-cost alternative to that $8,000-$9,000 office chair, especially if you're working from home and you have to sit in front of your desk at home like you would in your office. It makes a humongous difference.
Right. Kent, you know what I'm looking for is one of those chair pads that goes underneath your, you know, the casters on your chair, because my office is carpeted. My home office has carpet. Mm-hmm. I've gone through the plastic one. I've gone through the sort of accordion folding sort of fake wood one, and they all just stink. And so now I'm looking online at one of those glass ones, you know, that are super expensive, wondering whether or not it's worth it to put glass underneath this chair, because it makes me crazy.
I have the same issue, and I'll just pipe in real fast. I found the perfect one at Amazon for $30. Total, it's not glass, because I had glass when it was just shattered over time. From weight and stuff on it. My chair alone is 77 pounds.
Sure.
But yeah, the Amazon Basics one got really good reviews, so I thought I'd try it. Because I used to go through these plastic ones about once a year. They never lasted. It slides just slightly every once in a while. I have to move it about once every 3 weeks back to position, but it's been perfect. It's silent. It's smooth. I'm really quite amazed. And it did it cost a fortune. So there are good ones out there. Yeah.
It took me a while to uncurl mine, but I have the same one. And
somebody send me a link.
And it's on a hardwood floor. And to chime in on the chairs, if Amos were here, he would tell you the same thing about the secret chairs. He's got one and absolutely loves it as well. And I looked at that and I ordered a cheap gaming chair. And my one son has it now because it more appropriately fits his body than mine. And I went on to a non-gaming chair and I'm not happy about it. I should have followed Jeff and Amos's advice. Believe me, it would have been worth it.
These things have become incredibly important, and now you've kept me from spending way too much money on glass. And so so many people still working from home, or at least when they are at home, they're spending more time at home, even if they're going to an office and spending a lot more time in front of a computer. So, hey, Tech Radio, that's it. Thanks so much, Jeff Litterick. We appreciate your time.
Have a good one, all.
Kent Osborne, thanks for being here as well.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Lori.